This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. When calamity strikes, you can tune into almost any news program, including this one, to hear a raft of experts discuss why, in retrospect, we should have all seen it coming. In fact, argues author Nassim Nicholas Taleb, there are some events, admittedly rare, that are utterly unpredictable, that these dramatic episodes have huge effects, and that human nature requires us to come up with some plausible-sounding explanation after the fact. He calls those events black swans. We'll find out why in just a moment. But on the basis of all of our experience, this black swan seems to be totally impossible. Stock market crashes and spikes out of the blue, 9/11, some wars. And he says understanding black swans explains the world much better than what passes for understanding normality. Later in this hour, we'll talk to Ingrid Michaelson. MySpace made her a star, talking about the improbable. But first, the black swan. If you have questions about Nassim Taleb's theory of unpredictable events or questions about what it means, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. If you're familiar with the theory of the black swan and know about it, call now. If you're not, I suggest you wait a few minutes, listen to our conversation, and then call in. You can also send us email, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Nassim Taleb has devoted his life to the problems of probability. He's the former dean's professor in the sciences of uncertainty at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. His new book is called The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable, and he joins us from the studios of member station KPCC, Southern California Public Radio in Pasadena. Nice to have you on the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Before I start, I wanted to mention one thing.
Okay.
About 9/10 of the book is about what I call positive black swans.
Yes.
Low probability events that are actually very beneficial to us, just equally unpredictable, like the internet, Google, the rise of civilization, laser.
Your birth and mine.
Exactly. I mean, so it's a positive, and I focus on the positive more than on negative black swans, but I also focus on negative black swans.
Okay. But the terminology. For thousands of years, everybody in the old world only sees white swans. In fact, nobody even says white swan. White is presumed to be part of the definition of swan. Then, of course, comes along Captain Cook. He lands in Australia. And what happens then?
And they saw a black bird, and of course, he took one single observation, that exception, to disprove centuries, perhaps millennia, of confirmation. So my idea that you had no reason to believe that there could be a black swan, and here you have a black bird. But it's just a bird. It doesn't have huge consequences. But I use that metaphor because of its vividness and for another reason that I'll tell in, you know, in a few minutes. But the other reason is because it's, you know, I want to play something I call the narrative fallacy because, you know, we're suckers for narrative, so I wanted to play the game.
Well, narrative.
But
go ahead.
So I selected that bird, okay, and I call an event a black swan if it's like the bird, an exception. You have no reason to believe it can occur. And, okay, unlike the bird, it has massive consequences. As a matter of fact, I think that almost everything that has happened since we left the Pleistocene is that's determining, okay, was a black swan. Inventions, almost everything was discovered either by accident, was not predicted, and of course, when it starts to, when we see it, we don't really take it seriously.
Because we, as you say, human nature somehow requires us to go back and say, well, of course, that was perfectly understandable.
Yes, for example, take the Great War.
Okay, World War I.
Of course, the World War I and the sequel. Okay, of course, the two wars really in one.
Mm-hmm.
Before 1914, okay, first of all, it was deemed completely crazy. If someone described, you know, at a cafe, sat in a cafe in Vienna and said what was going to happen, he would have definitely been taken to an mental institution, all right? Yet the world was crazy. And it still is crazy. But anyway, so before the fact, okay, we had no reason to believe that such a thing could occur. But now take history books. Every single student learns about the tension that were mounting in Europe leading to this unavoidable war. I looked at the research and discovered effectively that war bonds, shown by Niall Ferguson, historian Niall Ferguson, the war bonds did not know about that event.
In advance.
In advance. So in advance, we didn't know it was possible, it was plausible, even plausible. But after the fact, we're going to try to find explanation because we'd like to feed children with explanations. And we tell them, oh, it was because there was a mounting tension between Germany and on one hand, France and Great Britain on the other. But of course, but we've had a lot of periods of tension that didn't lead to war, you see? So we by teaching children history, we try to convince them that we understand the world a lot more than we actually do.
Yet there's another explanation for trying to understand what happened is to say, we didn't foresee this. Utter disaster followed. Maybe if we studied what led up to it, we could avoid the next one.
Yeah, but the problem is that then you focus on, you have what I call the error of specificity. You're going to focus on one, okay, disaster, like the French did after the war. They focused, they said, well, okay, we're going to avoid the next one, we're going to build a wall. They built that Maginot Line. And sure enough, Hitler, it delayed Hitler by a couple of days. You see, he went right around it for maybe a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so we learn from black swans, from specific black swan, but we do not learn from the fundamental unpredictability of the world in some domains. So what I try to do with the book is draw a map, okay, a map of how to live in a world that we don't understand in two respects. The first one, that we have large events, you know, events of very large consequence and very low probability that really dominate it. And the second one is that you can do something about some of them or a lot of them. You can actually benefit from it. So that's sort of my book, is what mm-hmm. we can do in the world by figuring out where is it, okay, that the black swan dominates, which areas are those in which we cannot predict and in which the expert is not an expert, and so on. That's what I try to do with the book.
Okay, and let's take another of the examples you use, the methods you use in the book. If you are, for example, trying to determine the average height of the human male, and you got 1,000 people, and you measured 1,000 people, you'd get a pretty good idea of the average height of the human male, even if you went outside the example and say, let's throw in the tallest person I've ever met in my life, and you say, there's Yao Ming, and he's 7 feet 6 inches tall. One person in a sample of 1,000 does not affect it very much. If, however, you're also trying to figure out the average wealth of human people, and you put 1,000 people into a sample, then you throw in the richest person you've ever heard of, Bill Gates, this skews things considerably.
So I define these two areas, one in which the exception, the tallest human, won't make much difference. The other one, you know, not consequential. And the second one, where the richest makes is very consequential. You can never. I will never be able to become thin in one single day. You can become poor in one single day. So mm-hmm. I define these domains. One of them is the one in which we developed our intuition. I call it Mediocristan. And it's pretty much a world in which the black swan doesn't have consequences.
It's the physical and world.
It's the most of the physical, a lot of the physical world. Okay. And the second one is what I call extremistan. It's an environment, socioeconomic environment, in which the exception can dominate. So let's see how it can dominate. Take the cultural industry, okay, or the culture. A small number of books, you know, in 1994, I think 5 novels out of 10,000. Okay, represented half the sales.
Hmm.
Okay, 70% of the sales. That was in 1994. Typically, between 5 and 20 novels represent half the sales of novels. Okay, so the exception in that domain dominates. Okay, and if you can't predict which novel is going to be the next bestseller, or which movie is going to set the trend, or which idea is going to dominate our thinking. Okay, so if you cannot predict those, then effectively you cannot predict the future. And they are the reason behind our inability, because I looked at track record of experts. Really, we're very good at convincing ourselves that we can predict, but we can't predict in a lot of domains. So these are the domains in extremistan that are black swan prone. So this is sort of what I did. I drew the map in the book based on that distinction.
Let's see if we can get some callers in on this conversation. Our guest is Nassim Nicholas Taleb. He's the author, most recently, of The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And you can also go to our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And we'll begin with Glenn. Glenn's with us from Columbus, Ohio.
Yes, I thought, if I'm understanding your theory correctly, I thought of two examples. One was the Wright brothers' invention of the airplane during a time when it was considered impossible to do heavier than air flight, and so their achievement was not reported for several years simply because the world press thought it was impossible. The other example was our commonly held belief that 200 years ago and more, that the typical person died at age 45 because that's the average age of death, when there's a big difference between typical and average. When you use the example of a rich person walking into a room full of homeless people, suddenly the average is a $100,000 person.
Yeah. Do either of those qualify as black swans, do you think?
I think let me talk about the first one. Yeah, the first one, effectively, most technological discoveries are black swans.
There were an awful lot of people working on heavier-than-air flight. The Wright brothers happened to get there first, and even that's debated.
And even, no, but after the fact, we probably have this idea that it was predictable. I looked at the impact of technologies by taking 200, but let me give as an illustration the three most impacting recent technologies: the internet, the laser, and the computer. Okay, certainly the internet was not designed to enhance the private lives of teenagers. Okay, or their sentimental lives. Okay, it was designed as a military application. Okay, the internet was not made for word processing, but that's what it's ending up doing. Changed
good at other
processing.
Things too, but yes.
Yeah, but that was no. The IBM, the gentleman who owned IBM, and said there's no room for these machines. It was mostly made for complex calculation. He said maybe five. We'll get five of these. Why would anybody want to buy this machine? But effectively, we discovered uses later. And then, of course, the laser, the person who discovered or invented the laser, really the machine was not, their mind was not on eye surgery or on the digital revolution. He just wanted to impress his friends by splitting light beams. That was his idea, you see. So effectively, we live in a world that dominated by technology. We cannot predict the next technology because those technologies we end up that we predict end up usually going nowhere. So we can't predict them. But it's not a problem if we know it. Okay, it's only a problem if you don't know it.
Glenn, thanks very much for the call.
We don't know that fact. Yes.
We're talking about the impact of massive unpredictable events called black swans and why we so love to concoct explanations for them after the fact. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the things we can't know, from world events to market volatility. We like to think that risk can be measured and managed. Nassim Taleb's new book, The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable, argues that history is dominated not by the predictable, but by the highly unpredictable, massive, unforeseeable events he calls black swans. If you have questions about Nassim Taleb's theory of unpredictable events or questions about how to deal with all of this uncertainty, give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. Check out our blog, too, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let me ask you about one of the historical examples you give is the collapse of Lebanon into civil war when you were a kid, an event that had a profound effect on your life. You pointed out for 1,300 years the Mediterranean society in the Levant, what's now called Lebanon, managed to get along with a lot of tolerance on everybody's side, fairly amount of tensions from time to time, but everybody pretty much got along, and there was a belief that it would always get along. Of course, it dissolved into 15 years of terrible civil strife. But which is more important, really, 13 centuries of predictable peace or the 15 years that followed the black swan at the start of the Civil War?
Well, I'll answer you with a great analogy, which is, I was a trader before becoming a probability person.
A trader on Wall Street.
On Wall Street, yeah. I was an expert in derivatives. And there's a saying that there's a gentleman so-and-so whom I won't name, and he said he made $8 million in 8 years and lost them all in 8 minutes. Okay. So these events, don't occur often, but when they occur, they can be so devastating as to completely change the whole scenery. So you cannot ignore them, even if you had, someone can be profitable for a long time. Banks in America lost 100% of the money, every single penny ever made in the history of banking, in the summer of 1982. Okay. So what I'm taking from this is that there are some areas that are prone to a negative black swan and some areas that are prone to a positive black swan. And we don't seem to make a good distinction between them, you see. For example, banking and insurance, you know, the insurance companies, one single episode, the asbestos bankrupted the names of the Lloyd of London. The, yes, Lloyd of London is like, you know. So so there are some spots in economic life can be dominated by negative black swan, and we should watch out for those. And on the other hand, you have some spots in economic life can only be exposed to positive black swans. Say, for example, venture capital, okay? You can lose money for a long time and have an event, a single event that will make you extremely successful, you see? So what matters is not how long you've been successful, how long you've been unsuccessful, but what matters is a total. And that total is typically going to be dominated by the black swan.
Hmm. Let's see if we get another caller on the line. This is DJ. DJ is with us from Sycamore, Illinois.
Hi. Wanted to say that I enjoy listening to your show.
Thank you.
Your guest mentioned two examples. One was human height, and another was accumulated wealth. One of the some of these things, like human height, would have natural limiting factors and is not too much of a deviation. There's no real top-end limit to how much wealth, let's say, you could accumulate. Would we be better off learning how to recognize limiting factors or find the things that we were not aware of? And instead of looking for the black swan, maybe look for the ripples on the pond that it's leaving so we can know that there is one there, and that way it'd be easier to find all these hidden black swans?
Yeah, bingo. What I did is I made a demarcation between the two domains based on which domain can be dominated, doesn't have a limit, okay, like namely wealth or internet hits and stuff like that, what I call them domains that are prone to black swans. This is how I make the demarcation. Like height, you know, someone, I guess everyone, even, you know, almost has a mother. So you can't be, you know, 200 kilometers tall. You have to have a mother, okay? And the mother also needs to be large. So yeah, they are limiting, there's structural limits on how tall a person can be. There's no structural limit on how wealthy a person can be, you see?
One of the things you also point out, interestingly, is that in Mediocristan, where you're measuring physical things like height for the most part, this is a pretty fair world, as you describe it, while Extremistan, there's no limit on how rich you can be or how many novels you can publish, nevertheless, as you point out, amidst all those novels published in 1994, five of them got all the sales. It's unfair.
It is effectively society has been moving from Mediocristan in a lot of professions. Okay, if you're a dentist, you're in Mediocristan. In other words, you're not going to have most of your income in one single tooth drilling episode, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you
charge by the hour and you can only fit so many patients into the day.
Okay. So this is what I call non-scalable profession. You have to be there to perform, okay? So you can't do it long distance, or at least not now, and so on. Whereas if you're an author, okay, in the past, you had to, you know, we did not have, the information age made the world dominated by a very small number of authors. These don't have to write a book every time someone buys it. Like, now I have the Black Swan. My publisher doesn't call me every morning and say, oh, we sold X thousand copies, you have to write them, all right? I just wrote the book, and now I can die help sales. There's no need for me to be around to perform the act, okay? So this is how I pretty much I separate between these two professions. The first one would be dominated by the average. The second one would be dominated by the exception.
I'm wondering if you had any thoughts on how we can learn to spot the limiting factors that we may not even be aware that they're out there until they suddenly exert themselves.
What I do is I say, okay, this environment is prone to black swans. Now I have to figure out if it's open to positive black swan or negative black swans, okay? So this is how I defined it. If you are in a book business, a book can flop or it can become a bestseller. So the error has small costs, okay, if you do it right, and the payoff can be monstrous, okay? There are some businesses where the error can be monstrous and the payoff is small, okay? And I show that by opening yourself, you know, discoveries come from trial and error. Typically, the error is almost, you know, negligible, okay, doesn't cost a lot, and the discovery has a huge payoff, but most people are afraid of the error. You see, we are wired to be afraid of the error. Sorry?
I hope your book does that well. Thanks. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call, BJ.
Thank you very much.
Let's get another caller in, and this will be Rob. Rob's with us from Three Rivers in Washington.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I've been waiting a while to say this. This is a first-time listener, long-time caller.
That's highly improbable, Rob.
I know. Well, I'm glad you detected that. That might be some type of swan if we think of it the right way.
Maybe a gray one, but let's
go ahead. A gray swan, an ambiguous one. Anyway, I was calling more to the point of complimenting the author. I haven't, of course, read it, but it does seem to be really reinforcing a very important direction in our world today, which I think, from the more scientific point of view, you might call the role of complex systems or complex adaptive systems. It turns out that when anything creative happens, it usually isn't a linear thing of one step after the other, but something rather close to the edge of chaos that happens, and it sort of comes out of nowhere almost, and people have a hard time predicting these events because of that. But I think it's something that we're starting to learn more and more about from a sort of scientific point of view, and I think that's a good compliment to the author, because I think he's opening the eyes of people to something rather important.
Yeah, thank you very much for bringing it up. And effectively, I get a little more technical in the notes in the back, but extremist.
I look forward to reading the book, because that's
a little more technical is a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, but, And what happened is mediocre. What I call extremist Dan is a complex system, and I have a tableau of simple versus complex system, linear versus nonlinear. But let me explain in two words where the mistakes are usually made. In a complex system, you cannot easily see the link between action and consequence, okay? Like, for example, next time you want to invade a country, you should take that into account, that what you do, what you think you're going to do, all right, may not necessarily result, even in the best of circumstances, okay, if everything happened as planned, it may not really result in what you wanted to yield, okay? So the predictability of complex system is very weak. Okay, this is the first lesson. If you identify, so wars are hard to predict. We don't know it, of course, but conflicts, small time neighborhood conflicts, are very easy to predict. Okay, raids, the result of raids, we're very good at figuring out whether we're going to win and the effect of. You're winning, know, in a given raid.
Success.
So we have effective success. Okay, success. So primates are very good. Okay, so we are wired to understand raids and small conflicts. We're not wired to understand something far more complex called war. Okay. And this is why every war, almost every war we've had, the 100 wars since Napoleon, have been, completely mispredicted and almost completely mishandled, except for a couple of exceptions, one of which was the first Gulf War, you see. So we have, so this is one thing about complex systems. The other thing I say in a book that if you identify which variables are, from extremist and difficult to predict, okay, you can have a good life. Because they have very simple rules to them. Like the climate is complex. We're very good at predicting tomorrow's weather, okay? I mean, I would say rather good, but we're okay, okay? Your forecast degrades with time, okay? We're going to be very bad at predicting the climate of the world 100 years from now, you see? We are very good at predicting the mundane, the ordinary, in the very short term. We're horrible at predicting long term. Like, for example, economic and stock market variables, we cannot predict. We are horrible at it. People that we call experts effectively are no better than cab drivers, okay? They can't predict revolutions better than cab drivers. They cannot predict inflation better than cab drivers. And they can hardly predict earning ratios better than cab drivers, okay? But we call them experts. But in these complex domains, it's not their mistake. It's the only thing I blame them for is not knowing that they can't predict better than cab drivers, you see?
Mm. So I was interested in your whole cab driver conversation. I used to be an editor at various points in my life. And I would always hear foreign correspondents, their first day in the country, they'd be quoting, as one local said, and I said, is that the guy who gave you the ride from the airport? And if it was, I would make him take that out. I'm now thinking maybe I was wrong about that. You're suggesting cab drivers are just as well informed as everybody else.
They're as good. The difference is that this is why I recommend, if you want to talk about stock market, to talk to a cab driver, not stockbroker, because you get the, you know, you talk, people talk about the stock market for therapy. Not really. There's nothing effective. And if you listen to a cab driver, you're not going to rely on him and take as much risk as if you listened, watch CNBC or listen to experts, you see. And that's what the problem is. Yes.
I was just going to say that we're talking with Nassim Nicholas Taleb. His new book is The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation going on at our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on. This is Dave. Dave with us from Bend, Oregon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Mr. Taleb, I wanted to thank you for taking the time to tell us about your new book. I read your first book, Fooled by Randomness, a number of years ago, and I've been a trader in the currency market since, 1994, and I run a hedge fund. And I just wanted to say that what I see you going with in terms of your book, The Black Swan, it seems as though there's many parallels to your first book, and I have to say, to let the audience know, a lot of great insight in your first book in terms of really getting people to think that, you know, maybe I'm not as smart as I think I am. Maybe my string of successes has been simply right place, right time. And it's not to say that there may not be some skill involved, but it really put me specifically in a different mindset to know that, you know, sometimes you can be just in a very fortuitous situation. So I look forward to reading your new book, and I'll take your comments off air, but I just wanted to let you know it was a pleasure reading your first book, and I appreciate your insights very much.
Thank you very much, you're an insightful person, because typically most people who are successful don't think that their success don't have any dose of skepticism. They think that success comes entirely from skills, and effectively, what I say in Fooled by Randomness is not that, you know, there are no skills or it's not all luck. What I'm saying is we're much more likely to mistake luck for skills than skills for luck, you see. And but some people are introspective, and these are the people who succeed in the long run, succeed the most.
It's interesting also the two categories you go. Skill would seem to be applicable to mediocristan, while luck is a prime element, it seems to me, of extremistan.
Yes, but what I did in The Black Swan is I showed people how effectively you can with skills in mediocristan, you can. What I say is the following: with skills in mediocristan, you're going to be very successful, have a happy life, be upper middle class, probably. You know, you're going to definitely do very well with skills in mediocristan, because the link between action and reward is going to be very visible, and you know what to do. In extremistan, skills are often necessary but highly insufficient. You see? So if you're a writer, you need to, you know, be able to compose sentences. You can have all the ingredients, yet fail because Harry Potter is going to take the shelf space and you're going to be, you know, out of print, and people are not even going to notice your existence. You see? So because mediocristan, one person wins everything, there's a much higher dose of luck in mediocristan. But doesn't mean, and scientific discovery is the same thing. Okay. Who succeeded, almost everyone succeeded in science, tried and worked very hard. But a lot of people were just as skilled, worked very hard, didn't happen to be right there when, you know, the big thing was discovered.
Right, when they found the mold that turned out to be penicillin or whatever it was.
Exactly.
Yes. This aspect of extremistan and the black swan, dominated by extreme winner-take-all inequality, something you say we have to accept and learn from. Nevertheless, it's not something we can be necessarily, as a humanist, you say, this is not something you think is very good.
I don't like it, but every attempt to correct it, almost every attempt to correct it, led to worse consequences. You know that the difference, I mean, we're not as financially driven as economists would like us, you know.
Like to think we are, yes.
Yeah, they like to think we are. Okay, we're not you know, we like pecking order, okay? And the Soviets, you know, had even higher gradient in their pecking order. They had superheroes, okay? You see, they created superheroes. So they had dwarves and big heroes. Okay, these people weren't paid probably as much as a Bill Gates, but they were still the big superheroes. So we have not been able to fight this concentration, which comes from information, that you're going to have a very small number of people in the limelight. These people will live longer. These people will have most of the attention. And you know, artists crave attention when in Extremistan, a large number of people are going to suffer. So, I mean, how to cure it, I have no idea, you see. I'm just outlining the problem. I have, you know, often the cure, you know, we know what the cure led to, okay? Mm. Attempts to cure it, what it led to, all right?
We're talking with Nassim Nicholas Taleb. His book is The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable. Predictably, we're going to take another call with him after we come back from a short break. And then we're going to go on to talk with unsigned artist Ingrid Michaelson, MySpace founder, and Grey's Anatomy helped to make her famous. If you're an independent artist, how has the web changed the way that we market and profit from music and other arts? Do you need a record company anymore? 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's talk about highly unpredictable events that author Nassim Taleb calls black swans and how to get even with the vicissitudes of these giant surprises. Nassim Taleb is with us. You can read about how his childhood helped shape his theory of the unexpected. That's at npr.org. In the meantime, let's get another caller on the line. And this is Bill. Bill with us from Cincinnati.
Hi, Neil. I'd like to pick up the thread of an idea introduced by one of your earlier callers. Until very recently, we have assumed that our universe was a very Newtonian universe, a very linear universe, which says that if you have enough data, everything is predictable. On the other hand, we have recently discovered that the universe is not Newtonian. It is, in fact, chaotic and complex, which says that we can essentially predict nothing. That comes with some caveats, but predictability is not a component of chaos theory, which we think now rules our universe. I'd just like to add that comment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that a factor in your thinking, Nassim?
Yeah, definitely. In a book, I take that story of the butterfly in India, you know, or how a butterfly in India can cause a storm in Oklahoma. Okay, and I explain what we can do with this idea. I show if you're in a you have a billiard balls on a table and you're trying to predict the second or third bounce, anybody could do it, not a problem, okay? Which means you can predict 2-3 bounces. The ninth bounce, you need to have an equation that includes every single person around because the gravitational pull of a man, okay, in a room will impact the trajectory, okay? So you have to have complicated equation. To predict the 53rd bounce, okay, billiard ball on a table, the 53rd bounce, every single elementary particle in the universe needs to be part of your equation, okay?
It's a big equation.
It has to be. So you see how what the lesson I take from this, first of all, is it's unpredictable, but that it gets worse faster. In other words, that with time, okay, time, your ability to predict degrades very, very fast. Which is why you can predict tomorrow's, even in Washington, I'm sure you can sort of predict tomorrow's weather, okay? But we cannot predict climate 30 years from now.
All right, Bill.
And socioeconomic events, you know, being also complex, are very hard to predict. It's impossible to predict what's going to happen 10 years from now in America.
Bill, thanks very much for the call.
You're welcome.
All right, and let's get one last caller in, and this is going to be Hugh. Hugh's with us from Oakland, California.
Hi. What about black swans that seem to be staring one in the face, but people don't pay attention to, and can also create other black swans? Specifically, most of our news media coverage, this program and NPR, an exception, cover news and information in black and white instead of shades of gray, which can lead to our politicians and ourselves covering matters in the same way.
That's a very good question. Effectively,
and thanks for the kind words, Hugh.
Oh, thanks. Sorry,
I was just saying thanks for the kind words. But go ahead with your explanation.
Yes, what happened is what you're going to see in particularly in the visual media, okay, is going to distort the map of reality in your mind, and you're going to think that the world is dominated by a certain number of black swans, okay, which effectively are not as consequential as they make them out to be. Like, for example, plane crashes kill much, you know, fewer people than car crashes, okay? But the media is likely to talk about plane crashes, okay? So this sort of distorts what representation you have of reality, because a sensational guides the commercial media when effectively the statistical is boring, okay? So this is one of the problems I discuss in the book. And it has consequences that when you, in a political discourse, is dominated by the sensational.
What amazes me is we even have an expression, an ostrich sticking his head in the sand, and we still don't know how to apply such exceptions when it comes to things like the media.
Well, one of the theories of your book is, in fact, that we can create black swans and not necessarily a high proportion of good ones by our failure to recognize the obvious.
Yeah. We fail to see the obvious because we're not. I mean, most people fail to see the obvious because of they have too much information and you drown in it. And I sort of explain what impact it has on your brain, why information is bad for you. If you supply a clinical person, say a clinical doctor, with 50 pieces of information, his ability to diagnose what you have will degrade, okay? If you give him 10 pieces of information, he'll do better, okay? Not because 50 pieces of information is not better than 10 pieces, but what happens is our brain cannot handle too much information.
Hugh, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you for the program.
Appreciate it. And I'm sure that Nassim Nicholas Taleb would argue that every single piece of information in his new book is absolutely critical, and you should review them all carefully. The Black Swan is the name of the book. It's subtitled The Impact of the Highly Improbable. Nassim Taleb, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thanks.
Nassim Taleb joined us today from the studios of KPCC in Pasadena.